Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Wyndham Hotels and Resorts makes travel possible for all. Whether it's the long haulers looking for a great cup of coffee, a roomier rest for the on a whim road trippers, or a place to make summer memories with the whole family. No matter who you are, where you're going, or why, with 24 trusted brands to choose from like La Quinta, Days Inn, and Super 8, your Wyndham is waiting. Get the lowest price at WyndhamHotels.com. Restrictions apply. Visit website for more details.
We all have that one coworker who's just a little bit strange, a bit of a loner with a gap in their resume that they never talk about. They are usually harmless, if a bit absent at the Christmas party. But when your coworkers suddenly start becoming mysteriously ill with a so-called virus, and only the tea boy is fit and healthy, it might be worth making your own cuppa for a while, particularly if that tea boy is Graham Young. Welcome, ghoul friends and spook daddies. Thank you for joining us for another episode of Horror House. I am Amy.
And I am Dom.
And if I was serving tea to all our lovely listeners, the only thing I would lace it with is a little drop of sunshine.
Oh.
Sorry, I couldn't even... I can.
That's cute.
Gross. Oh, God, that was horrible. I'm so sorry. That wasn't me at all, was it? Dom, how you doing?
I think a demon took over your body for a second there, right?
Yeah. As I said it, I was like, do you know what? I'm surprised I'm not gagging on it. That's what she said. Yeah. Sorry about that. I'll go back to
normal. I mean, the listeners appreciate the cuteness, to be fair, I'm sure.
Do they?
If I made tea for people, I would lace it with sugar, spice, and everything nice. And maybe, I was about to say maybe cyanide, but I don't want to give too much away.
Maybe cyanide. Maybe after this episode, you'll have a few more ideas of things that you could lace it with.
Maybe. And I make a really good cup of tea, apparently. So that could be my modus operandi.
I'm actually drinking a hot drink tonight. I've foregone my usual alcoholic beverage and I've gone for coffee. It's mainly because I am lacking so much energy right now. I just needed a bit of extra caffeine. This is my... Oh God, do I want to admit this on the record?
How many coffees have you had?
This is my eighth today.
Christ, I would be having palpitations.
It's my eighth, and then I've also had a monster as well.
I would be in trouble. if I have one can of monster during my night shift because it's the only way I can get through a night shift. And like that is enough to get me pretty buzzed. So I think eight coffees would. Yeah, that wouldn't be great.
They're only like little coffees. This size coffees, not like, you know, massive coffees, but...
Only this size coffees, and then you show a mug, which is pretty
big. Normal size. But you know how everyone has like a big mug, right? There's a normal size mug, which is what that is. And then there's like a big mug that's like your comfort mug, and you kind of fill it up and hug it for a bit.
Yeah.
It's not those coffees. It's just little like normal coffees.
Yeah. Everyone has that giant Sports Direct mug in their cupboard.
Exactly. It's the one that I generally make a hot drink in, thinking, I don't really want this hot drink, but I'm a bit cold. So I'm just going to make it and then cuddle it for a little while.
Yeah. And then you wrap it around your hand and then you put it close to your body.
It's great. Yeah. And it's really cold here at the moment. So it's just nice, you know? It's just a nice little moment. We're being very wholesome today.
I'm not going to get into the stereotypical British let's rant about the weather, but it is extremely cold.
Maybe that's why I've had so many coffees, to be fair, is because I was also a bit cold. But genuinely, I've got very low energy. So I wanted to perk myself up because this story is wild and I wanted it to have my full Amy-ness.
Yes.
Which is definitely a word.
Yes. Amy-ness and Dom-ness is in the dictionary.
The Amy-ness and Dom-ness needs to be at peak.
But in answer to your original question, I am good. I know we got away from that for a while there. I'm good. I want to quiz our listeners though before we went on mic on live. Amy said that she is extremely tempted to eat an entire sticky toffee pudding, not for pudding, for dinner.
For dinner.
Would that be acceptable, listeners and viewers, if Amy did that? I'm very interested.
It's girl dinner. It's
girl dinner.
I mean, I don't think it's that bad. Like, you're talking to the person that has two cigarettes and a black coffee for breakfast. It's not the worst meal I'm going to eat today.
True.
You know, it's...
True. How many people does it say on the box? What's the serving suggestion?
I mean, I've not got it in my hand, Dom, to be honest, but I think it's two. So it was part of it was one of those, you know, those meal deal things like, you know, the main side, the bottle of wine and the dessert. It was one of those. So I assume it's for two people, but I personally think that if it's for two people and you eat it in one go, then it counts as a meal.
I mean, that's fair. I can get behind that logic.
See, you were saying this, I feel, logic. To bring me a little bit of shame, but I feel like the listeners are going to support me in this. So,
I was outing you for all the times you've outed me.
I mean, I feel like I've done it that much, but if you're bitter about it, then maybe I have. Maybe it's just natural to me now.
I mean...
I just don't even notice it anymore.
Listen, You verbally tear me down so often that it's just your general language at this point.
I just don't even realise. Oh, I'm sorry if that's the case.
Amy loves me dearly, listeners and viewers, honestly. Yeah.
No, I mean, you joke about it. I genuinely do. It's just that you're a very good outlet for all of my rage occasionally.
You're a very good...
That's one of the reasons that I love you, is because you take my rage and my bile and my spitefulness so on the chin. And it's so rare to find that in people. So I appreciate you for that.
I will be your outlet.
I have absolutely no idea why you love me, because I'm a cunt. Sorry, C-bomb. Sorry, everyone. Oh, shit. Can we put that on YouTube? You're going to have to beat me.
Where, to be fair, when we're not monetized. So,
so we should be fine.
Maybe we'll get away with it.
Sweet.
And you're all right. I mean, the boobs and the ass help. But you're all right.
I mean, yeah, fair. Yeah, I feel like that's how most people view me, to be honest. Funnily enough, we were talking last night. We were talking before we went on mic about my story on my personal Instagram, which is a bit different to what we do here. And someone sent me an anonymous message last night that just said, "You're all right, I suppose." I was like, wow, thank you.
Wow.
You know, you felt the need to say that anonymously. Thanks.
You really know,
I would hope that's the sort of thing you could just tell me.
Loved.
Yeah, I was like, okay, cool. I mean, it was a surprisingly nice change from the stuff that I normally get sent. I was like, oh, okay, good. I'm all right. Sweet. Yeah.
And to be fair, when you were like, it was just, you're right, I was expecting you to follow up with something just hideous.
No.
But that's...
No, that was
like you said, it probably, it makes a change from your normal messages.
It was... It was interesting because I had multiple messages last night. One of them said, I literally went from I'd cut a bollock off to see your ass to you're all right, I suppose.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah. This is a very humbling experience.
Yeah. You know, they just had to be one that just, you know, kept your ego in check in there.
Yeah,
you know, someone
exactly.
had to just throw one in there and be like, you know, we need to, you know.
Yeah, for sure. This bitch needs bringing down a peg or two. And I appreciate that. I do need that sometimes. So
oh, you. Dear.
Dom, have you heard of the Bovingdon poisonings or John Hadland
no.
laboratories?
I haven't.
I had vaguely heard of it only because John Hadland Laboratories, where a lot of this took place, is not too far from me. It's in Hertfordshire. And although I am technically an Essex girl, I do technically live in Hertfordshire. So it's just down the road. But I hadn't really done too much research into it. And then I stumbled upon a documentary, as one often does, on Amazon Prime. About the Bovingdon poisonings, and I was pretty drawn in and thought, do you know what? We haven't covered this on Horror House, so why not do this?
Okay.
Cool. Should we get going on the old story?
Yes. The YouTube people are going to moan that we're droning on too much.
Yeah, well, you know what, YouTube people? It's our podcast and we like having a little catch-up at the start of it. So if you don't like it, please stay, but just skip. That's why we put chapters in. You don't have to listen to this bit if you don't want to.
Yes.
You can just skip straight to the story. And that is your prerogative and we will not judge you for it.
Yes. No, absolutely not.
As long as you still subscribe, obviously.
Yeah.
And aren't offended by the C-word, which I've already dropped in the first 12 minutes. Sorry about it. Cool.
Deary me.
So, Graham Young was born on Sunday, the 7th of September, 1947, to Frederick and Bessie Young in Neasden, Middlesex. He also had an older sister called Winifred. Young's mother died of tuberculosis when he was 14 weeks old, and was subsequently sent to live with an uncle and aunt, while his sister was sent to live with their grandparents. Several years later, Young's father remarried and the family were reunited. They well, obviously not the mother, that would have been difficult, but the new mother and the rest of the family were reunited. Young was fascinated from a very early age by poisons and their effects and considered Victorian poisoner William Palmer, who I don't know if you've heard of, but he was a pretty famous Victorian poisoner, to be a personal hero. Young also read extensively about black magic, Adolf Hitler and Nazi Germany, because if you're going to take some, you know, reading topics, why not make them those?
So,
that's not concerning as a child.
What a bunch of people. Like, you know, when people would be like to me, who's your hero, Dom? And I'd be like, you know, Kobe Bryant, like, he's pretty cool. You know, Leonardo DiCaprio, I think he's an amazing actor. And then there's this guy, like, so Adolf Hitler is pretty fucking cool. The Third Reich is pretty dope. Nazis are cool. There was this poisoner in the Victorian era that was a bit of a legend. It's just like, oh, Graham.
It's not really the heroes you admit, is it? Like, it's... Those are the ones you just maybe keep to yourself. It's like, I outed myself recently on a different podcast. Again, sorry, shout out to Tutjig. As being a fan of Jeffrey Dahmer. And I instantly regretted that. I was like, oh, you don't refer to yourself as a fan. Like, you're not a fan. That's not a good thing to be. Like, you can be interested in Jeffrey Dahmer, which I've said many times, you know, on our podcast, I say that all the time. You know, I'm a fan. I'm interested. Now I'm just doing it. It's like Freudian slip.
On our
I'm
own
very interested in him because he's, you know, he's an interesting guy. But you can't call yourself a fan because that's the line, isn't it? And I've just done it twice in the space of the last 30 seconds. So. In 1959, as he passed his 11 plus and went to grammar school, he started to read books on advanced toxicology. Again, interesting topic for a young. Excuse me. Yeah. In 1961, Young acquired antimony, which I'm definitely going to say wrong at some point because apparently I've just got a massive problem with saying it. But antimony, it's a chemical, from a local chemist, signing the poisons register in the name of M.E. Evans. His knowledge of poisons and chemistry convinced the chemist that he was older than he appeared. At this time, I think he was just a teenager, maybe 14, so very young. Wow. Beginning in February that year, he began poisoning members of his family. First, his stepmother, Molly, who suffered vomiting, diarrhea, and excruciating stomach pain, which she initially dismissed as bilious attacks, indigestion, gas, that sort of thing.
Oh, okay. I was about to say, what the hell is that?
Well, yeah, it's. I think it's quite a like an old-fashioned way of describing it, but essentially it's just gas and stomach cramp.
Yeah.
If I...
You're just farting.
Well, next time I'm around you, I'll drink some normal dairy milk and you'll find out exactly what a bilious attack is.
I appreciate the thought, but I'm good, I think.
No? Oh, okay. I thought you'd be into it. Whatever, that's fine. Before long, his father suffered similar stomach cramps, debilitating him for days at a time. Soon after that, his sister became sick on a couple of occasions over the summer. Shortly afterwards, Young himself fell violently ill. It even seemed as if the mystery bug had spread beyond their household. A couple of Young's school friends had similarly been repeatedly absent from school, both suffering with similar symptoms. In November 1961, that same year, Young's sister was served a cup of tea by her brother one morning, but found its taste so sour she took only one mouthful before she threw it away. While on the train to work an hour later, she began to hallucinate and had to be helped out at the next station, and was eventually taken to hospital, where doctors came to the conclusion that she had somehow been exposed to the poisonous Atropa belladonna, which, if you aren't up on your Latin terms for plants, is deadly nightshade.
Ah.
Young was confronted by his father, but he claimed that Winifred, his sister, had been using the family's teacups to mix shampoo. Unconvinced, Young's father searched his room but found nothing incriminating. Nevertheless, he warned his son to be more careful in future when, quote, messing about with those bloody chemicals.
And maybe learn how to make a good cup of tea at the same time.
I mean, yeah. Just don't mix shampoo in teacups, which wasn't really happening anyway. But yeah, just stop making tea in general, I would say. If all of your mates and all of your family have gotten ill, just stop.
That's beyond, I'm not very good at making tea.
Yeah. I mean, spoiler alert, there's something more play. But, yes.
Really?
Yeah, I know, right? This isn't just a story about how some kid made all his parents ill because he made them tea, shockingly enough.
So... I also find it interesting that he's gone straight for the family.
Yes. Well, he's still very young. So he's not got a lot of contact with other people at this point.
Which is, yeah. I was like, you know, he's going to start out, you know, with maybe friends. And then he's going to work his way up. But he's just like, you know what? Sister needs to go. The stepmom.
In for a penny, in for a pound.
Dad.
Poison your family.
Needs to go. maybe it's because Winifred. Is it Winifred? Did you say
Winifred? That's what her name is?
Winifred,
right? Yeah.
Maybe he just was like, you've got such a Tory name. I don't like it. Poison.
Yeah, it's not ideal, is it? It's not ideal. He went straight in with the family. On Easter Saturday, 21st of April 1962, so at this point he's 15, Young's stepmother died. Her death was attributed to a prolapsed cervical disc, which made me do my pelvic floors for a minute there. which was believed to have resulted.
I don't even have a cervix, and that made me cringe.
It made your cervix go, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm very familiar with my cervix, and I do not want it to be prolapsed. I didn't even know it had a disc. But there we go. Much later, Young told police that he had poisoned her with a lethal dose of thallium. At her wake, Young poisoned a male relative after lacing a jar of mustard pickle with antimony. Shortly afterwards, his father became seriously ill and was taken to hospital, where he was told that he was suffering from antimony poisoning and one more dose would have killed him. Young's aunt, who knew of his fascination with poisons, became suspicious, as did a science teacher who discovered several bottles of poison in his school desk. The teacher and the headmaster arranged for Young to be interviewed by a psychiatrist posing as a careers advisor, who contacted police after Young revealed his extensive knowledge of poisons and toxicology, which you probably would.
Yeah. Also, grafting at your stepmother's wake is bold. I'm not going to lie.
Like, he is committed to the cause.
Jesus. So it's a sad day. It's a very sad day.
Yeah. Oh. One that I'm responsible for, but back to work. No rest for the wicked.
I'll just do this now because we're already at the wake. So why not?
Yeah, exactly. Also, a jar of mustard pickle, of all things.
Yeah, Jesus.
You know.
Oh, dearie me.
It's the only reason I go to wakes is for the mustard pickle. And the grief, obviously. The grief's also important. But mainly yeah. Mustard pickle. Mainly mustard pickle.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is.
You just like, this is a very sad day. I'm sorry for your loss. I'm sorry for your loss. Just unrelated, is the buffet table still at the back? It's the, okay. Very sad day. Good, very, good very sad day.
Good to know. I mean, do you know what? I'm just going to put it out there. The buffets at funerals are very good.
They are, to be fair.
Generally. It's a sad day, and obviously... I mean, I've been to a lot of funerals and I've always been very sad. But at the same time, those finger sandwiches, yo. Pretty tasty. Just avoid the mustard pickle and you'll be fine.
Yeah, exactly.
Young was arrested, shockingly enough, on the 23rd of May 1962 after returning home from school. Vials of thallium and antimony were found in his possession. When questioned by police, he confessed to poisoning his father, stepmother, sister, and a school friend. Psychiatrist Dr. Christopher Fish testified that Young had a psychopathic disorder rather than a mental illness and failed to, quote, develop a normal moral sense. He felt it was, quote, extremely likely that Young would reoffend and recounted a conversation in which Young had said, quote, I'm missing my antimony. I miss the power it gives me.
It does seem like it gives him some sort of... I was about to say, it does seem like he gets some sort of power from that. Like he sort of, you know, he has sort of the power of life and death in a way.
Yeah.
So he probably is a bit God really complex-y. Enjoys that. Yeah, oh yeah. Oh, God, absolutely. Absolutely, 100%. 100%.
Which is bloody concerning for a 15-year-old.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's not... It doesn't bode well, does it?
It really doesn't. No, it does not. Fish recommended that Young be detained at Broadmoor Hospital, which, if you're not familiar with UK prisons and places, Broadmoor's pretty fucking intense.
Yeah.
It's had some pretty major people stay there. Peter Sutcliffe. Charles Bronson, those sorts of people.
Yeah.
An institution
where like the worst people normally go.
You don't want to be there. It's definitely not a fun place.
No.
That's where he was sent. Young pleaded guilty to three charges of poisoning his father, sister, and school friend, and was convicted of malicious administration of a noxious thing to inflict grievous bodily harm, which is quite a long charge, but that's what he was charged with. He was not charged for murdering his stepmother, as an autopsy report did not list poison as the cause of death, but he did confess to that later. Obviously, the cause of death was determined to be the cervical prolapse, but yeah, I mean, potentially he also killed her too. The judge, Justice Melford Stevenson, ruled that Young was to be detained under Section 60 of the Mental Health Act at Broadmoor. Furthermore, he was not to be released for 15 years without the approval of the Home Secretary, which is, you know, it's again, pretty intense for a 15-year-old kid.
Yeah.
At age 15, Young was the young... This is a hard sentence to say. Young was the youngest ever inmate in Broadmoor's history. Soon after his arrival, John Berridge, a fellow inmate, died of cyanide poisoning. Coinkydink? I think not.
I wonder who was responsible for that.
I mean,
I think we're going to need to get the Scooby-Doo gang on this one. I think they're the only ones that will be able to figure this mystery out.
Yeah. In my head, I've got, you know, the cork board with the string, and there is literally only two pictures on it and one piece of string. I mean, case closed, right?
And you know that, like, someone, like, there'll be, like, this detective just staring at this board, like, cigarette in his mouth, just being like, day three. Yeah, I will figure this out soon. I'm close to you, Young. I'm very, very close.
As soon as Amazon deliver my red string, you are fucked. Well, in case it wasn't obvious, Young was surprisingly suspected by staff and inmates, and not least because he enjoyed explaining in detail how cyanide could be extracted from laurel leaves. And it just so happened that the grounds around Broadmoor were covered in laurel bushes. However, his involvement was never proven, and the death was officially ruled as a suicide.
Okay.
So, I mean, I guess it could have been. Maybe he just gave him the information about laurel leaves and it just so happened that he decided to top himself that way. Who knows? Later, Harpic, which, again, if you're not familiar, is a brand of bleach here in the UK, I'm pretty sure in other countries, was found in a nurse's coffee, and the contents of a missing packet of sugar soap, which is highly toxic, were discovered in a tea urn. Young continued to read medical toxicology textbooks obtained from Broadmoor's library. Excuse me. And he also continued his interest in Nazism, reading William Shire's The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich and Lord Russell's The Scourge of the Swastika. At one point, Young grew a toothbrush moustache and took to mimicking the speeches of Hitler and listened to musical compositions by Richard Wagner, who had been one of Hitler's idols. So, really pushing that Adolf is my hero shtick.
You need to get better idols, Graham.
Anyone, literally anyone else.
Yeah. Like, you could draw a name out of a hat at this point.
Yeah.
And it would be a better option.
Yeah. I mean, unless you just happen to pull out Stalin, then, you know, it can only be better, right?
Can you imagine? He's like, I don't really think that much of Hitler anymore. It was a phase. It's gone now. Who do you look up to now? He's like, Stalin. It's just like,
shit. Oh dear. In 1965, Young first applied for release from Broadmoor. His father and sister attended the tribunal and stated that if Young was released, none of his relatives would be willing to house him. I wonder fucking why. His father also insisted that his son should, quote, never be released. which I think is fair.
Yeah.
Really?
This is quite true.
You know? Absolutely quite fine true. When you've been poisoned by your son.
I love that. Okay, I can imagine, like, Young was probably like, oh, no, they'll support me. They'll have my back. Father and sister are just like, fuck nope. You.
Yeah, you can forget fuck, mate, stay because there's no you chance you're living with us. Shockingly, Young's application was rejected. 5 years later, in June 1970, Broadmoor psychiatrist Edgar Udwin wrote to the Home Secretary to recommend Young's release, announcing that he was, quote, no longer obsessed with poisons, violence, and mischief, and he is no longer a danger to others. What a sentence. Don't worry, he's not, do you know what? He's not into poisons anymore. He's not going to be violent, but he's not even going to be mischievous. If you think that he's the sort of bloke that's going to tie your shoelaces together under the desk, he's not even thinking about it anymore. Don't stress.
That mischievous little teenager that came to our prison, he's no longer, that mischief is gone. He is a fine young man.
He's a stand-up guy, he's young now, so don't even worry about it. Pretty compelling argument, you might say. However, Young remarked to a Broadmoor nurse, quote, when I get out, I'm going to kill one person for every year I've spent in this place.
Someone needs to tell Young that maybe he shouldn't talk as much as he did.
Just stop talking.
Does.
You're so close, mate, to getting out, and then you go and drop that fucking bombshell.
Yeah, you could have kept that to yourself, and you would have been a free bird, but. Yeah. Just know when not to vocalize your thoughts, Graham.
Yeah, just keep it to yourself, buddy. It's fine. Well, worryingly, when referring to a man who has made that statement, Young was released from Broadmoor in 1971 after 8 years detention. He initially stayed with his sister and her husband in Hemel Hempstead, but within a few weeks, he had resumed his interest in poisons, and after one unsuccessful attempt to gain them, he quickly was able to forge authorization from a college to buy 25 milligrams of antimony potassium tartrate, which is essentially the full name of antimony. Young attended a storekeeping training course in Slough and stayed at a hostel in nearby Chippenham. He befriended 34-year-old Trevor Sparks, another resident of the hospital, and the two occasionally visited a pub together or shared a bottle of wine in Sparks' room. Young would later confess to poisoning Sparks with the antimony sodium tartrate. But Sparks, the poor guy, it didn't kill him, but he suffered for many, many years with bouts of sickness, diarrhea, pins and needles, and pain in his testicles.
Oh, no. I would have taken the quicker death in this situation.
He did later die of heart complications that it was believed to be as a result of that poisoning.
What a horrendous... How long after... Did he die?
I haven't got that to hand, to be honest, so I'm not sure.
Okay.
But I think it was a few years. So he had to suffer with that for quite a long time.
What a horrendous, horrendous way to go. Jeez Louise.
I mean, he's literally not even been out for a few months before he's done this again, so maybe don't let him go, you know? That might have been a mistake.
Do you reckon the governor was just like saw this on like in the newspaper and he was just like
Well, more worryingly, the Home Secretary might have seen this in the paper and gone, wait, that name rings a bell.
Oh yeah, true. Yeah, that's a good point.
Home
Secretary is just like so Prime Minister, I done goofed and we got a problem.
the bad thing. Sorry.
Don't bring this up in the House of Commons, please.
Don't tell the others. It was after this initial re-entry into the world of poisoning that Young secured a job at John Hadland Laboratories, and his poisoning spree would truly take flight. Yeah, so that's basically like a whole entire case before we'd even gotten to the break and the extent of his crimes. So I think that's a good place for us to just pause a moment before we dive in to the rest of what our old mate Graham Young has done.
I agree.
Do you think so, Dom?
I agree. It sounds like that was a mere warm-up for Graham. That was testing and troubleshooting before he gets to to the big leagues, yeah.
Absolutely. Well, in that case, grab a cuppa, maybe check what you put in it or what's been put in it before you drink it, and we'll see you back here in just a few.
Amy says if we record an advert, she'll put it on her podcast, but I don't really know what to say.
You're an idiot.
Yeah, I know.
Tell them what it's called.
Talking Till the Joy Is Gone.
Tell them where they can find it.
All the best podcast platforms.
Tell them what it's about.
What do you mean what it's about? It's only the greatest fucking podcast on the face of the planet. This is fucking annoying. Just go listen, people. It's called Talking Till the Joy Is Gone. You'll find it everywhere. But ladies, listen responsibly, because we will make you wet.
Hey, friends. I'm Katie.
And I'm Emily.
And we're the hosts of Malice
and Mocktails,
a true crime podcast. We are just two sisters covering cases of both vintage and contemporary true crime. And because true crime can be a bit of a bummer, at the end of every episode, we share with you some of our favorite mocktail recipes. Join us every week, wherever you get your podcasts. And until next time,
make good choices.
Bye.
Bye.
I'm just going to make a glass of squash. I shall be back in a second.
Cool, cool, cool.
Regale the listeners with a tale while I'm gone.
Oh, really? Okay. I'm going to wait for you to leave. This will maybe only make it into the audio episode, but we can have a little chat while he's away. Dom drinks a lot of tea. Like a lot. And I don't think I'd get away with putting something in his tea. Not that I'm planning to kill him, obviously. Well, not to his knowledge anyway. But I don't think I'd get away with it. Plus, I think he makes his tea in the proper way, which is, you know, put the bag in, put the sugar in, put the hot water in, and then the milk. So if I put something in, I'd have to put it in after the milk for it to not be seen. Depending on what I was using, I suppose. I'm thinking of it in my head as a powder, but I guess if it's not a powder, it doesn't really matter. If it's like a clear liquid, then it would be fine. I just realised he's probably going to hear this when he's editing and think, oh, fuck, she's actually going to kill me. If you are, Dom, I'm not really going to kill you. Then I'd have to do my own editing. That'd suck. And obviously the illegalness, that wouldn't help either. Oh, you're back. I'll shut.
I'm back.
Yes, you are. Hi. I definitely wasn't telling the listeners anything.
I like when I go to edit and I hear like you just have a little convo during the breaks. It's very, very enjoyable to listen to.
I mean, you're going to love that one. Are you ready to enter into part two?
Ready, ready.
Welcome back. Thank you for joining us for part two of our Graham Young Bovingdon Bug adventure. I don't think that's the right word. I'm making it sound a bit good and it's not good. But yeah, welcome back. Dom, how you doing? Did you enjoy your break? Have you had a cup of tea and how did it taste?
So that title sounds like a really dodgy children's book.
Yeah. It's not an adventure you want to go on.
No. Yeah, part one was very interesting. I said during the break that I loved that was just a precursor. That wasn't even like the main case. It was just a warm up to what is about to come. So I'm very intrigued to hear part two. Very, very intrigued.
Good. Well, in that case, let's dive straight back into it. So as I mentioned, Young secured a job at a laboratory, John Hadland Laboratories, as an assistant storekeeper in Bovingdon, Hertfordshire, near his sister's home in Hemel Hempstead. The company manufactured thallium bromide iodide infrared lenses, which, nope, me neither, not a clue. But the key word there is thallium, because he thought that he could get his hands on the thallium to use for his, you know, purposes. But he would have been incredibly disappointed to find out that no thallium was actually kept on site, and he would have had to port it elsewhere, which wasn't ideal.
Damn.
On his application.
My scheme has failed.
Yeah. Can you imagine how disappointed you'd be? It would be like going to work at Cadbury World and them going, oh, sorry, there's no chocolate here.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to have to pop out to the shops if you want chocolate. He's like, shit. God's sake.
Best laid plans.
Exactly. On his application, Young falsely claimed that his lack of employment history was because he had suffered a nervous breakdown following the death of his mother in a car accident, which is so laced with lies. Like, number one,
Jesus.
You did not have a nervous breakdown. And number two, your mother didn't die in a car accident.
No.
So, no. Okay.
Just like he laces his tea with poison, that is laced with lies.
Oh, I love that. That's a great for the album. Laced with lies. Brilliant. So poetic.
I occasionally have good lines. It's very rare, but they happen.
I'm going to steal it. But, you know, I'm just going to piggyback off of your creativity, as I always do, and steal that one. So, yeah, thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Young's new colleagues found him unpredictable. He could be surly and kept to himself, but on other days he was more cheerful. During breaks, he usually sat alone reading, invariably a book on one of his favourite subjects, war, chemistry,
Nazism.
The Nazis or famous murderers. I just want to take a very quick note. This isn't a slight at people that sit on their own at lunch breaks and read. I do that. It's just not about the Nazis generally.
I definitely was that, you know, that kid who was sit on his own table at school. I would definitely go away from people at lunch at work when I was at my old job. Like, I didn't read Mein Kampf during my lunch break, but, you know, I would go away and do my own thing.
No, but to be honest, even if you are someone that is going away on your lunch break and reading, I don't know, books on Stalingrad or whatever, then that doesn't make you a serial killer. So you're fine. Carry on doing it. Just don't poison anyone, I think that's the takeaway here.
Yeah.
He was not talkative with his colleagues unless it was one of his favourite topics being discussed. Young's duties at Hadland included collecting drinks from the tea trolley in the corridor and bringing them into the storeroom. Each employee had their own mug, which made it a hell of a lot easier when he was selecting specific individuals for poisoning. How convenient, you know? It's how thoughtful of them to have their own mugs.
This is very, very much so. Very much so.
Yeah, really considerate victimizing.
Absolutely not take my own mug into work.
Just make your own tea.
That's crazy.
If there was ever a case for make your own tea, this is it.
Yeah, very true. Very true.
Soon after Young's arrival at Hadland, he started poisoning his co-workers, shockingly enough, focusing on his immediate colleagues in the storerooms. His modus operandi was to slip poison, usually antimony or thallium, into their tea or coffee. Victims would fall ill with symptoms that included vomiting, stomach pain, nausea and diarrhea. Initially, the mysterious illness was assumed to be a virus and was nicknamed the Bovingdon bug. Other explanations put forward were contamination of the local water and radioactivity from a disused airfield nearby. So no one immediately, well, they had no reason to immediately think we're being poisoned. They just thought, okay, some sort of bug's going around, or we're mildly being exposed to radiation, which seems pretty extreme, but yeah, that's what they thought.
Yeah, I mean, like you say, they wouldn't have any reason really to suspect Young at this point, would they?
No, it's not your first thought. I mean, he's lied to get the job, so you don't know his history at this point.
Yeah.
And if you're not doing anything different in your day-to-day, you wouldn't necessarily think, oh, okay, someone's poisoning me, because what reason have they got?
Yeah.
He's got no motive to poison these people, so
I just
don't think it would have been your first thing.
No.
Young's first victim in Bovingdon was 59-year-old Bob Eggle, a storeroom manager at Hadland and Young's immediate superior. Excuse me. Eggle, who was a veteran of the Dunkirk evacuation, was often asked by Young about his wartime experiences, shockingly, considering how into the war he was.
Yeah.
Eggle began to fall ill in June 1971, weeks after Young's arrival at the company, taking several days off work with diarrhea and severe stomach pains. Eggle's health improved after a week-long holiday, but on his return, Young put a lethal dose of thallium in his afternoon tea. His condition deteriorated rapidly from this point, consisting of intense back pain and numbness in his fingers and feet. Eggle was transferred to the intensive care unit at St Albans City Hospital, where paralysis set in, and Eggle finally died on the 7th of July 1971.
Ooh.
Somewhat horrifically, ironically, Young was chosen to accompany the managing director, Godfrey Foster, to Eggle's funeral as a representative of the department Eggle had managed. Foster recalled Young remarking how sad it was that, quote, Bob should have come through the terrors of Dunkirk only to fall victim to some strange virus.
Oh, no.
What a douche.
Wow. What a dick. Yeah, yeah. Holy hell. This man survived Dunkirk. Oh, my God, he should have got through this. All right, Graham.
Yeah, I wonder why he didn't.
Yeah.
Do you know what?
He didn't try and kill anyone else at the funeral, did he? Because he likes killing at funerals.
I saw recently, and this, I'm not trying to make light of this man's death. You know, I'm sorry. It was tragic. He should have died way too young. Poor Bob. But I saw a meme recently, and it was, you know, when they just quote something, and it said, me at my boss's funeral, leaning over the coffin. And it said, quote, who's thinking outside the box now, Bob? And
I've seen that before.
Just after I outlined this episode and just thought, oh, God, that's not good. That's a terrible timing. That's a terrible coincidence. But yeah, that's kind of the sort of thing I can imagine Graham Young saying to the boss that he's just killed with poison.
Absolutely. Absolutely. He probably leant over and was like, survived Dunkirk, huh? Didn't survive me though, did you? I've seen a few meme templates like that. Like, I always see one that's like a sort of like retail job meme. And it's like when your boss shows up at your funeral and like leans over your casket and he's like, you're still coming into work today, right? That always tickles me.
God, we've all had a boss like that. It's so relatable.
Yeah. Or like, it's like, we're understaffed. Could you help us out?
During Eggle's absences, Young targeted his assistant, Ron Hewitt, poisoning his tea with antimony again. Hewitt had already accepted a job at another company and was working his notice. Young was hired to replace him, hence, you know, why they met, essentially. After leaving the company, he suffered no further symptoms. I wonder why.
Shocker, right?
As a result of Eagle's death and Hewitt's departure, Young was promoted to head storeman for a probationary period. For the next few months, his poisonings were limited to small doses of antimony in his co-worker Diana Smart's tea, usually when she annoyed him. Young wrote in his diary, quote, "Die,"
I shouldn't laugh,
as in Diana Smart, irritated me yesterday, so I packed her off home with an attack of sickness. I only gave her something to shake her up. I now regret that I didn't give her a larger dose capable of laying her up for a few days.
That's like, there's petty and then there's that.
I mean, I won't lie and say I've not had colleagues in the past where I haven't thought about it.
Oh yeah.
But I haven't gone and then poisoned them. That's just crossing the line, isn't it?
Exactly. There are plenty of colleagues that I've, you know, thought about, like, it would be such a shame if, you know, I pushed you into the road, you know, in the path of an oncoming vehicle. I've never actually pushed anyone into the road in the path of an oncoming vehicle.
I think
I've thought
just,
about it.
He's letting his intrusive thoughts win.
he is.
He's got the tools.
He is.
He's just going with it.
Yeah, absolutely.
On the 8th of October 1971, Young put thallium acetate in David Tilson's tea. Tilson found the tea to be too sweet for his liking. This was mostly because Young had put a ridiculous amount of sugar in it so that it hid the taste of the thallium, and therefore did not drink it all. Young then administered a second dose of thallium a week later. Tilson was admitted to hospital with numb legs, breathing difficulties, and chest pains. His skin was so tender, he could not endure the weight of the bed sheets, and all of his hair fell out. Young, because obviously why wouldn't you have one, had a backup plan to visit Tilson in hospital and offer him a bottle of brandy laced with more thallium. Subsequently, Tilson recovered, though he was left permanently impotent by the poisoning.
Oh, dear.
I'm impressed he recovered. If you're having that many symptoms, like it's...
Yeah.
If you've recovered that, then good on you, but... Yeah.
Yikes.
At the same time that he was poisoning Tilson, Young also began poisoning another Hadland employee, Jethro Batt. Batt had become friendly with Young and would give him a ride home to Hemel Hempstead. And how did he thank him, I hear you ask? Well, he did it by administering 4 milligrams of thallium to Batt in 2 doses, which was enough to kill him. However, Batt found the coffee Young had made for him too strong and did not drink it all. Nevertheless, Batt was admitted to hospital with stomach and chest pains, and again, all of his hair fell out. The poisoning made him suicidal, obviously, because of the symptoms and having no hair and whatnot, he became suicidal. He did ultimately recover, but again, like Tilson, he was also left impotent. Young apparently, for the first time, felt a little bit of remorse for poisoning Batt. He wrote in his diary, quote, "I feel rather ashamed in my actions in harming Jay," as in Jethro Batt. So, I mean, I don't really know why, because he did it on purpose, but I assume it's because he'd been nice to him and given him gifts that he maybe felt a bit bad.
Yeah, I reckon so. I reckon that would have had something to do with it.
Yeah, I mean, there's...
But at the same time, you don't thank people. You don't thank people by poisoning them, Graham.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it was after the fact. Like, he's been giving him lifts home, but he was still like, oh, shit, this is going to make it really awkward when I poison you.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if I buy sympathy for Jay, to be perfectly honest.
Fred Biggs, a 56-year-old local councillor and part-time employee at Hadland, was poisoned by Young with antimony, prompting the typical Bovindon bug symptoms. Then, on the 30th of October 1971, Young put 3 doses of thallium acetate in Biggs's tea. By the following day, Biggs had developed chest pains and had trouble walking. Within days, he was admitted to Hemel Hempstead General Hospital and then transferred to Whittington Hospital in North London, which basically is a hospital. There's a lot of big names for what this hospital does, but I'm going to try and narrow it down into something that I can A, say, and B, people will understand. Essentially, it's like a neuroscience hospital. So they look at like nerves and the brain. His central nervous system had, the reason for that was that his central nervous system had deteriorated to the point that he could not speak and had trouble breathing. And again, his skin began to peel off because the nerve endings were firing up and just stripping his skin, basically.
Yeah.
Young expressed concern for Biggs's condition. Nice of him. Continually telephoning Biggs's wife and the hospital directly to make inquiries. Biggs finally died on the 19th of November, 1971. If you count in at this point the amount of people he's poisoned since he's been out of prison, not before, because I can't do that maths, we're up to 7.
But remember, everybody, the mischievous side is completely gone. There was no mischief.
He's not interested in mischief anymore.
Absolutely not.
It's not his bag anymore since he came out of prison. I'd hate to think how many would have poisoned if it was.
Yeah, yeah. Also, I just want to say him consistently phoning up his wife is such a dick move. Fuck me.
It is. Like, I kind of get the... I understand the hospital because you're wanting to know if he's still alive and, you know, what effect the poison's having. For someone that's into poisons.
Yeah.
Okay, I kind of understand that. But to be calling his wife is...
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty sick.
Absolute prick. Fuck me.
The management at Hadland became so concerned about the mysterious sickness that they initiated an investigation. Luckily, because, you know, everyone's kind of sick, so something needs to happen. Meanwhile, some of Young's co-workers began to have suspicions about him. Diana Smart, who he'd made sick a few times, noticed that Young was never affected by the bug and suggested that he might be a carrier of the virus, which is what they thought it was at the time. And Philip Doggett, another employee, informed the management of Young's unhealthy interest in poisons. Intrigued by the young storeman who seemed knowledgeable about medicine, Anderson, who was the company's sort of in-house medical person, sought out Young after the meeting and quizzed him further on his, you know, fascination with poisons. And he quickly discovered that Young had a deep knowledge of toxicology, poisons, their effects, their doses, which prompted John Hadland, as in John Hadland Laboratories, the owner, the big boss, to contact the police. The investigating officers noticed that the onset of the, quote, Bovindon bug, which was what it was known as at the time, coincided with Young's arrival at the company, and the background check, which should have been done before he started. Thumbs up to you too, Dom. Thank you for that.
That was weird. I didn't even put my thumbs up. I don't know why that happened.
The background check that should have happened at the start revealed that he had poisoning convictions in the past. So obviously, alarm bells are ringing.
Yeah.
Let's maybe, you know, do something about this bloke.
Look into that.
It might be an idea at that point. Young was arrested at the home of his aunt and uncle in Sheerness-Ken on the 20th of November 1971. Nothing incriminating was found on his person, so, you know, he had the opportunity to deny any wrongdoing. But as he was being led away, his aunt overheard him ask the officers, quote, "Which one is it you're doing me for?"
Man, stop talking, Graham.
Stop talking. Just stop saying things. What a stupid fucking thing to say.
Someone disconnect this man's brain from his mouth.
Yeah. Just shut your mouth. I mean, obviously we wanted him to get caught, obviously, but like, that's stupid. Yeah. That's a fucking dumb thing to say.
Like it's great that he's dumb enough to not know when to not vocalize his thoughts. Obviously for him that's not good. For us it's amazing because but for him, if you're a criminal, just shut up. Know when to shut up.
Don't need to brag.
Yeah, exactly. Excuse me. Bless you.
Thank you. Yeah, so, I mean, I think they might have had suspicions if they hadn't already up until that point. When police searched his bedsit, they discovered a large stash of bottles containing poisons, including 434 milligrams of thallium. To give you a note on how much it is, it takes 4 milligrams of thallium to kill a man.
Jeez.
So a fair bit.
Damn.
And 32 milligrams of antimony. Again, I think it takes about 3 milligrams to kill someone. So the latter is about 200 times a lethal dose that he just had sitting around in his bedsit. Other poisons
man,
in his...
Man was well stocked. Absolutely. With his poisons.
Absolutely. He was not going to run short anytime soon. Other poisons in his possession included atropine, and continine and digitalis. Fun fact about digitalis, which I haven't written down, and don't be concerned that I know this. It's what the poison is that's present in foxgloves. If you've seen those plants, that's where that poison comes from. That's why you shouldn't eat foxgloves or have them in your house. Well, you can have them in your house, just don't eat them. Anyway, this is a tangent. his lodgings were also covered in Nazi paraphernalia. Great. Including swastikas, which is really hard to say when you've got a lisp, so please give me some credit for it. And photos of Nazi figures.
Please, you're doing amazing, sweetie.
Oh, God. Do you know what? I wrote this outline, and as I was writing it down, I was thinking, I've got to say swastikas. Multiple times. And I also have problems with the thuz. The thuz is really hard. So thallium is a real fucking nightmare. So I've had to practice quite a lot today before I did this. So,
well,
yes, I'm giving myself a pat on the back. And I think I deserve it.
Yes. You're killing it.
I love it as well because I've mentioned my lisp a couple of times on episodes. And I've had comments from people and they're like, I didn't know you had a lisp. I'm like, yes, thank you. I work really fucking hard to hide it, so thank you. When I'm having to say swastikas multiple times, it gets a bit difficult. But yeah, he had a lot of those knocking about.
Yeah.
Police also discovered a detailed diary that Young had kept, which we've quoted from a little bit already, noting the doses he had administered, their effects, and whether he was going to allow each person to live or die. Young confessed quite quickly to poisoning Eggle, Biggs, Bat, Tilson and Trevor Sparks, who was the guy that he initially lived with before he got the job, and said that he deliberately used different poisons in order to confuse doctors. He also boasted of having committed the, quote, perfect murder by killing his stepmother, Molly Young, who, again, he wasn't charged with the initial time. This was the point that he actually admitted that. He spent 20 minutes explaining to the officers the effects that thallium has on the human body. When asked why he had poisoned people who were his friends and colleagues, Young responded, quote, I suppose I ceased to see them as people. At least a part of me had. They were simply guinea pigs.
Yeah, that sounds pretty on brand. I was expecting him to just be like, 'cause I can. Or something like that.
I mean, it's essentially the same thing, isn't it? It's, you know, he wanted to know about poisons and he just did it.
He just, it's like when you reach the end of a word count on an essay, he just added words to pad it out.
And I don't doubt as well that he would have, if he hadn't been caught, he just would have kept going. It was just his thing. You know, he just wanted to keep doing it. And there was no chance that he was going to be naturally stopped, I don't think, which is pretty terrifying. Young was charged with 2 counts of murder, 2 counts of attempted murder, 4 counts of administering poison with intent to injure, and 4 alternative counts of administering poison with intent to cause grievous bodily harm. Glad we got through that.
Damn.
He pleaded not guilty.
Okay.
I mean, sure.
What?
Okay. You do that. Which, shockingly, made it really difficult to find a barrister willing to represent him. And the trial was so boned multiple times because no one wanted to represent a man that was so blatantly guilty and yet admitting his innocence, or, you know, protesting his innocence. Eventually, though... go on.
Sorry. I'm kind of dumbfounded that he pled not guilty. He's someone that would... To me, he's someone that would have straight up just been like, yeah, I'm guilty, I did it all. And was just unashamedly guilty, like being like, yeah, this was me. This is all me.
I think you've kind of tripped yourself up as well if you've said, oh, which one? Which one is it that I'm being arrested for?
Yeah,
you've basically fucked yourself there, yeah. Mate. So
I love that like he's not known when to shut up. This whole time, he's not knowing where to shut up. This whole time, his mouth is just, he's just let it run and it's got him. And now he's like, yeah, I didn't do any of it. I'm not guilty. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
That's wild.
It is pretty crazy. And yeah, again, makes it understandable as to why no one wanted to represent him, because you don't really want to deal with a man like that either. But eventually they did find someone that would defend him. And the trial was held at St. Albans Crown Court and started on the 19th of June, 1972. The prosecution called 75 witnesses to give testimony.
Holy fuck.
And Young himself was the only witness in the defence.
Oh.
Mostly because he did it. I mean, there's no other defence witnesses because he's guilty. So...
Oh dear, that's hilarious. I call my first witness
me.
Myself.
I call my first, last, and only witness. Tis I.
Also, I would. Oh God, imagine being his defense lawyer. Oh my God, that's. I mean, you're literally just like, well, I'm getting paid. So
yeah, I guess that's good. Yeah, you definitely wouldn't want that task at all.
No, absolutely not.
On the 29th of June 1972, after 1 hour and 38 minutes of deliberation, the jury found Young guilty of 2 counts of murder of Bob Eggle and Fred Biggs, and 2 counts of attempted murder of Jeffro Batt and Dave Tilson, both of whom ended up impotent. And 2 counts of administering poison with intent to injure. That was Diana Smart, who was the one that he sent home sick because she annoyed him, and Ronald Hewitt, who was the one that he took over from and was on his notice period and then left. He was found not guilty of administering poison to Trevor Sparks and Peter Bugg, and was acquitted on all 4 counts of administering poison with intent to cause grievous bodily harm. Through his counsel, Young requested that he be sent to a conventional prison rather than Broadmoor. His request was granted, and he was sentenced to life imprisonment, which he served at Park Lane Hospital, later changed to Ashworth Hospital in Maghull, which I have no idea what that is, but there we go. Interesting tidbit. For this part, While at Ashworth, Young befriended Moore's murderer Ian Brady, with whom he shared a fascination for Nazi Germany. So earlier when we were like, hey, you guys should bond over your love of, you know, unconventional characters. He did do that, but with Ian Brady, not me.
Yeah. So his choice of heroes isn't very good. And I was like, maybe his choice of friends is just a little bit better.
No.
Than that. And it's not.
So much. Not
really
so much.
Not. Can you imagine? Like, my bestie is the Moore's murderer. Fuck's sake.
I mean, yeah. it's not ideal, is it?
Oh, dear.
You just keep a better circle. Brady's 2001 book, The Gates of Janus, in which he discusses various serial killers and obviously his time in prison, included a chapter on Young. Brady wrote that Young was, quote, genuinely asexual, finding even the discussion of sexual matters not only uninteresting, but also distinctly distasteful. So I don't really know why he's commenting on his sexuality, but, you know, that's just a little extra bit from Ian Brady's perspective of all people.
He's like, I don't have time to be sexual. I have people to poison and plans to put together.
Meh, I don't know. Confusing guy. However, you will be happy to know that Young died in his cell at Her Majesty's Prison, Parkhurst, on the 1st of August, 1990, just 1 month before his 43rd birthday. The cause of death was listed as myocardial infarction.
What?
Me
is
neither.
That?
something to do with the heart. Heart stopping, or I don't know, something like that. It's heart related. But as Young had no history of heart disease, it has been speculated that he either committed suicide with something that he was able to find to poison himself with, or was murdered by prisoners or prison staff who did not feel safe around him, which I think is also pretty likely as well. So
yeah, that's probably
he died flawed. Somehow. I mean, 43 isn't old. So I would assume something has gone there.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, like, 43 is kind of old, but not that old. Young enough.
I wouldn't. Yeah. It's
I wouldn't
older,
kick a 43-year-old out of bed.
I was going to make a joke about your age, but I won't. I'll be nice.
Yeah, you can go fuck yourself. Also, I'm not 43, so fuck you.
Yeah, I know, but the age gap between 43... yeah, like, it wouldn't shock me if, you know, the actual cause of death was he got a kick in from fellow prisoners or prison staff.
Well, that no one's going to feel safe around him, are they? Particularly when he's been in prison before. And potentially, all right, granted it wasn't proved, but potentially he still managed to poison someone, you would still be a little bit on edge. So it's in everyone's interest, I think, to maybe get rid of someone like that. Or maybe he did just top himself, you know, that's also an option.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe.
That is the story of Graham Young and the Bovingdon poisonings. What do you think, Dom? I know it's not one you've heard of before. How do you feel about it? Feeling good about your next cup of tea at work?
I mean, to be fair, like, I work night shifts in a boarding house, so literally I make my tea, no one else makes it. So if I'm lacing my own tea, then that's an issue.
then we've got another talk to have, maybe off the mic.
yeah exactly. Principal was like, yeah, Dom, we need to talk.
Are you good?
Are you all right? No, that was very interesting. I was going to say I was very entertained. I was very entertained by the case. This guy is an absolute prick. And like, just full on dirtbag for so many reasons, like calling a guy's wife while he's in hospital. Not knowing when to shut his mouth. Like, just an absolute dirtbag. But very, very, very fascinating case, and one that I've not heard of. And we talked about it in the break. It's not very often that you have cases of male killers, male serial killers, male murderers, whatever, that use poisoning as their sort of method. That seems like it's very much a female killer MO is using poisonings, and you know, it seems like males are very much more sort of violence and, you know, strength rather than, you know, poisonings as a method.
So that was one of the reasons that I mentioned it being so different to last week's episode, because obviously last week you had young females who did something very, very violent, whereas this one you've got a young male who did something that, granted, it's still, you know, heinous, but it's not like outwardly violent, like it's sneaky. So it's quite quite the contrast.
Oh, definitely. It was a very interesting case, and I very much enjoyed it. And thank you for regaling us with that this week, Amy.
You're more than welcome. We all made it through my lisping and my mispronunciations.
You smashed it.
Thanks. I don't like the fact that you used the term smashed, because I can't say that either.
You're killing it.
Thank you.
That's not very good either. No, you're doing amazing, sweetie.
You're doing good. Keep going. Cool. In that case, Dom, see us out.
Yes, gladly. Thank you again for listening this week. We hope you enjoyed this episode. As for next week's episode, will be a collaboration episode we recorded a few weeks ago now. I want to say it was a few weeks ago now. We recorded a few weeks ago with Leo and Stephen from the amazing podcast Spoilers of Horror. They've been on the show a few times. It was their third go around. And it's another true crime episode, but it's a little bit more light than the last few episodes have been, with obviously the Slender Man stabbings last week and a whole lot of poisonings this week. But
I've never laughed so much.
Very much looking forward to it. Yeah. like I said, it's a lighter true crime episode, and it's about a man who had a knack for escaping prison. He didn't particularly enjoy being cooped up for too long at a time. But very, very excited for you guys to hear it. I think you'll really enjoy it, and it was a blast to record it. But until then, there are many, many ways that you can support the show. You can subscribe to the YouTube channel. You can follow us on your podcast app of choice. You can follow us on social media at horrorhouse_pod. Whack a message in the Q&A section on Spotify. DM us, leave a review, leave a rating, all of that good stuff. That is free to do and takes 30 seconds of your time. We would appreciate it if you did. If you want to support us financially, there is the Buy Me a Coffee link. me and Amy are both salary wise, we've had a bit mishaps with regards to our jobs. So if you could throw us a few quid on the Buy Me a Coffee, then we would appreciate it. So until
I'm drinking 9 cups a day, week, so I'm going to need it from somewhere.
Yeah. That is true. So as always, from me, stay spooky, you beautiful people.
Stay spooky.
Stay spooky.
What a guy. What a guy.
I really fancy a cup of tea.
I mean, I make a really good tea. And I wouldn't even lace it with anything.
I'm not accepting it from anyone else, I'm afraid.
Oh, a Dom tea is a damn good tea, though. You're missing out. You're missing out. Just saying.
When you hear what I said about you in the break, you might want to put something in my tea, so...
Okay. I'll be like, that bitch, where's my cyanide?
Fine. I'm ready.